We made USAA insurance to help you save. Take advantage of discounts when you cover your home and your ride. Discover how we're helping members save at usaa.com/bundle. USAA. Restrictions apply.
Are you ready?
Let's make some noise. Come on.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the latest edition of the Broad Street Line. I am Roy Burton. Alongside me, as always, my tag team partner, a man who has already pre-ordered his tickets for Wally Mania 2024, one Chris Domingo. Mr. Domingo, how are you doing as always, as we say, during this pandemic, this air quote Saturday morning, sir?
There's going to be a lot of wrestling-isms, and I don't care if 14 people listen. You know how Shawn Michaels lost his smile circa 96? I am smiling because we got one of our favorites to talk about. Like, I don't know, not even to just talk about one topic. We got him to, like, I don't know, just run down everything on his mind. He's gonna drop a pipe bomb on us right now.
There are very special yearly traditions, annual traditions in the world of sports. Of course, there is the Masters, as Jim Nance would say, a tradition unlike any other. And here on the Broad Street Line, we have a tradition unlike any other. Every year before WrestleMania, we bring on friend of the show, Andrew Goldstein, to help us break it all down. Andrew, how's it going, man?
What's up, guys? Road to WrestleMania, we're on it.
Yes.
We're chugging along. I feel like this year, the road to WrestleMania has felt longer than usual. There's a lot going on, a lot of high drama, a lot of superlatives being thrown out, and a lot of people returning. And there's two nights of WrestleMania. It's just, there's a lot going on, plus everything outside of wrestling that I want to talk about. So like I said, super honored to be here. I look forward to this every year. You guys are like my favorite people to chop it up with. I feel like we all have the same Venn diagram of interests. So I'm just super psyched to do this.
We're coming for those trios belts, baby. Let's go.
No, we are pleased to have you again on, as always, with us here on the Broad Street Line, 106.5 FM here in Philly. Now, I've asked this question to anyone who would humor me these past few weeks. I'm going to ask it to you because you are the resident, you know, wrestling expert in these Broad Street Line streets. So I will ask you, am I crazy for thinking that this bloodline angle in WWE is the most compelling storyline in wrestling history?
I mean, it's no Jimmy Yang Wang doing in 2006, written by yours truly. But yeah, I'm your boy. Giddy up. Yeah, dude, it's been great. Honestly, I was telling you before we started recording, I have two little ones. So the idea that on a Friday night I'm watching 2 hours live of SmackDown is very far-fetched, but I DVR it. And, you know, most of the show I'm on 2 or 4 speed, fast forwarding through it just to sort of keep up with the angles. What I talk about now is who do I stop fast forwarding for, and anything Sami Zayn, Jey Uso, Kevin Owens, Roman Reigns, that's an immediate pound of the stop button of the play button rather. And it's must-see TV. It's been must-see TV for the last year. And, you know, I'm very – you guys know me. I'm quick to be critical, but I got to give it to Triple H and the creative team that sticking with it, which we don't – you know, often we see stories started and then 2 weeks later they stop when something goes wrong. Lots of things could have stopped this story in its tracks and they just kept going. The Vince thing happened and they just steamrolled ahead. They didn't let anything affect them. Yeah. And they just put together this just glorious storyline that, by the way, it's not just this last year. There are underpinnings of this story that go back to Sammy and Kevin's debut in NXT, which was like, you know, however many years ago. Mm-hmm. Then there's the Cody level and Cody with Dusty, and Dusty training Roman and neglecting Cody. And then back to Paul Heyman's history with the Wild Samoans and the Samoan SWAT team in WCW. So there are so many layers, and it's all the kinds of things that we always used to like be mad at WWE for ignoring history, historical context, but they've played all of it, and they played all of it to perfection. And like I said, must-see TV this whole past year.
Now, Ange, I guess you mentioned something that happened in the middle of this storyline was the big guy isn't there anymore. And I'm not talking about the Big Oos. Vince McMahon apparently, or just like, I don't know, is no longer, I don't know, the head of WWE. They have, I mean, like, believe what you want, but Triple H appears to be like the final call, the final shot caller, basically. Have you noticed, is there like, from someone that watches the product with a different lens than me or Roy will ever, do you sense a difference? Period.
Yeah, man. Well, for one, wrestlers have last names or first names. Sorry. You know, Austin Theory became Theory, and then he went back to being Austin Theory.
Right.
And, you know, words like wrestler have been used on screen. Words like belt have been used on screen in the last, you know, four months. And so certainly I see, you know, people like Johnny Gargano have debuted, guys who would never have gotten a chance under, you know, I could, you know, he's my size. There's no way Vince would have brought him in such a big angle with The Miz and, you know, the whole thing like that. And so certainly you can tell that when Triple H took over, there were certain things that he wanted done and certain guys of his that he wanted to bring up and test them on the main roster and give them a shot that I don't think would have been as easy to do with Vince in charge. But so vocabulary obviously has been scaled back. And, you know, just things like it's just been like a better flow of the show. And it's mm-hmm. felt more it's felt less like a TV show about wrestling and more of a wrestling show on TV.
That's why we have you on, Ange. That is seriously like I don't like because I've like I don't know. Like, I think the flow and like some reasonableness to like Robin. I don't know. Like, yeah. Like, I don't know. A dot connector of like, I don't know. And I feel that, like, I don't know, like, people ask, is the product better? I think it's an unequivocal yes. And, like, I don't know, is Hunter perfect? No, but, like, I feel that.
I'm glad you said that. I will tell you, I was cooking up a hot take for you guys that the Hunter era has not actually been that good. Ooh. But I don't think I can stand behind that take fully. But I do have my complaints. I mean, if you follow me on Twitter, I got into a huge beef. I try to keep a low profile these days, but I couldn't help myself. And I tweeted what I thought was an egregious error, which was reconciling Sammy and Kevin before mm-hmm. Mania. Mm-hmm. I thought it was all leading to them going into Mania as sort of reluctant tag team partners in the mold of Matt Hardy and MVP back in the day. We've seen so many examples of reluctant tag partners. Like, I don't like you. You don't like me, but we have a common enemy. Let's go. That's where I thought.
Save the embrace for 65,000 people. And
dude, exactly. And I thought that was going, you know, besides Cody holding the title up with the confetti and the pyro, I thought the hug between Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens was like the, if that was the A, that's the one A, that's like the one B of like super duper pops that were possible at Mania. I just thought the roof would have been blown off SoFi if you had Kevin and Sammy finally hug after all these years in the middle of the ring after winning the tag titles. And they gave away the hug on the SmackDown up against the first week of March Madness. I was like, what are you doing? I couldn't believe it. I was incredulous. So like things like that. The other one I'll point out is, you know, teasing Cody's return at the Rumble with vignettes mm-hmm. instead of letting him return as a, you know, as a surprise, like Cena in the Garden. I mean, obviously when he came in at number 30, it was a cool moment, but imagine the magnitude of that moment had they not said a word. Had they not?
It definitely wasn't 08 Cena in the Garden. I think you make a great point about I get the buildup of wanting to, like, I don't know, like, get viewers in, but, like, I don't know. Like, I you know what? I actually was going to, like, reply to that initial Kevin and Sammy thought, but you know what? I went back into my bunker, and I was like, you know what? I definitely see, like, I don't know, where it's, like, I don't know, like, where, like, you're, like, wondering whether they're going to turn on each other during the match, and then, like,
exactly.
I, like,
Yeah. It took, to me, it just took all of the a lot of the intrigue away for the match. Like, now it's just a title match, right? It's just Sammy and Kevin are back. They're buds. They're on the same page. They're full force going for the tag titles. And that's what the match is about, is them beating the two, you know, overtaking the 2-year reign of the Usos. Whereas if they did it my way, or the way I've been thinking about, there would have been all, like you said, Chris, all that intrigue of will they, won't they, can they keep it together long enough, you know, all that sort of gray area, which is always the best stuff in wrestling. And so, look, these are all nitpicks, and I'm usually not a great fantasy booker. I just really wholeheartedly felt that the hug in the ring would have been a Benoit Eddie moment, but all these jabronis in my mentions were just like, how do you even make the match if they're not friends? I was like, do you watch wrestling? have you watched wrestling ever in your life? Like, you know.
I will argue this point. And again, like I was not one of the jabronis in the mentions, although I thought about hopping in, but I will argue the point that I think it got 10 million. The clip got 10 million views over social media over 24 hours.
Well, ultimately, I'm wrong and I'm the jabroni.
All I'm saying is this business is about making money. And, yeah. You know, socially, you know, in terms of social media, in terms of their YouTube channel, that clip got 1.3 million views in 11 days. So on some level, they did something right. Like, again,
credit where credit is due to the creative team and Hunter. But we're always going to question some decisions.
Yeah.
I think the Cody one is a bit more egregious just because
I agree.
It just didn't need to happen. There was no, those vignettes really didn't buy you much. It's not like it influenced a buy rate. There's no more buy rate, right? There's no more pay-per-view buy rate that you care about.
Yeah, there were no Veer vignettes.
Also, but also, the Royal Rumble sells itself, right? The main event of the Royal Rumble is the Royal Rumble match. It's not you're not tuning in because so and so is in the Royal Rumble. You're tuning in because the Royal Rumble is the coolest gimmick match in the game right now, or ever, really. The Royal Rumble is sold on the people attend the Royal Rumble or watch it on Peacock because of the match, not because of anything else. And so I just didn't think it was necessary to promote Cody's return the way they did.
No, I will agree with you on that. I think that was, but again, but again, in WWE's credit, again, maybe this was a merchandising, you know, ploy, because Cody Rhodes merchandise sold out that first day of
running. I mean, he's killing it. He's on Cena level.
Yeah, so, no, speaking of, I mean, You're a historian. You've been in the trenches. Are you surprised of the reception that Cody has gotten since his, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if it's not hyperbole to say he had one of the greatest, like, I don't know, like, entrances or, like, returns in WrestleMania history. Like, what is the appeal of, I don't know, because I feel he's hitting every demographic. He's hitting kids. Like, I don't know. My friends who have kids that watch wrestling, love Cody Rhodes, and they can't say it. It's like superhero like, but I mean, he's got my 42-year-old rear end hooked.
It's definite. I mean, honestly, I am surprised, especially the fact that he debuted in the way that he debuted with his AEW music and his AEW entrance and the whole deal and the song and the whole deal. And they're calling him the American Nightmare, which isn't the most kid-friendly name, by the way. And I am surprised that the younger sect of the WWE universe got behind him as quickly as they did. And then he got injured and went away. And it's like, you know, what have you done for me lately kind of thing, usually in wrestling. But they bought right back in the second he came back, which is probably part of the reason why they did the vignettes, to sort of precondition fans to be like, hey, remember how much you love this guy? Well, he's coming back and he just fought through this crazy injury. But look at him, man. He's got the bleach blonde hair. He's got the million-dollar smile. He's got the lineage. He's decked out in red, white, and blue. Yep. He's got the pyro. He's got the song with the call and the answer and the fan participation. I mean, he's checking every box for conquering babyface, for ultra, ultra over babyface. It's like he was built in a lab. And so I'm not on one hand, I'm not that surprised, but I am a little surprised that kids love him as much as they do.
So let's talk about it. Cody Rhodes, Roman Reigns, obviously the headline match of night two of WrestleMania. Is this finally the end of the 900 plus day run for Roman Reigns?
My answer to that, because lots of people have asked me, my answer to that is it's almost biblical. If not Cody, who? If you're not going to, at WrestleMania, if you're not going to, you know, go through this entire, I'll just say year, but it's been a year plus. But in terms of Cody, if you're going to travel down this road and get to WrestleMania, get to the pinnacle, go through everything we've been through, mm-hmm. and you're not going to flip the title, well, then what do you do? What else do you have to do with Cody, with Roman Reigns after 900 days? Like, to me, it's time to let Roman go away for a little bit and then come back and surprise us all and get right back into the main event, maybe with a little tweak to his character. Like, to me, like I said, it's biblical. If not Cody, then who? Like, who is going to get hot enough in the post-Mania sort of season premiere? What story are they going to tell us if they keep the title on Roman? So
people have said the guy that I think that this bloodline story he started with, main event Jey Uso, who I feel is, other than Roman Reigns, the biggest beneficiary of this storyline. Okay. Because I feel that, like, sure, his elevation has been pretty remarkable.
If that is what comes out of the tag match and into the main, and then there's a flip with Jey, I could certainly see that. But to me, you put the title on, like I said, the red, white, and blue, the $1 million smile, the suits. That dude can go on the Today Show post-Mania, like at least for a month or two, put the title on Cody, let him do the media tour, let him be the champion, let him, you know, tell this unbelievable family lineage story and his story about his father and putting the title belt on the Rhodes family mantelpiece. Like, you have time to tell the Jey story, in my opinion. So it all leads up to the obvious answer, which is I think they have to flip the title. I mean, the moment calls for it.
So let me just play devil's advocate for a second, though, because Cody Rhodes is all about finishing the story. That's what he's been saying in these promos, you know, finish the story. You know, we all know the story that he's told. Once he finishes the story, if he wins the title at WrestleMania, that's probably the end of the story that he's telling right now. How do you continue to make a Cody Rhodes more compelling, or as compelling as he is now, once he has the title, once he's quote unquote finished that story?
Ah, man, he's on the turnbuckle, holding the title up, the confetti and the pyro's going off, and here comes Karrion Kross. God damn. No, I'm kidding. I think it's a good point, and I think it is a little strange that they're using a plot point or a promo point that is so definitive, like finish my story.
Right.
Because of exactly what you said, like if you're going to say, like if everything's leading up to I need to finish my story, this isn't a retirement match. Like the dude still has years ahead of him. But again, I think once that title goes on him, he becomes a marked man and every heel comes out of the woodwork. They're already teasing that the roster splits are going to sort of, you know, go away, fade into the distance. And so there's a lot of heels that you could spend time with.
Like a guy who was in legacy with him.
Yeah, if Randy can come back healthy, unless you mean somebody breaks Ted Jr. out of jail.
No, but I guess, Edge, is this a concern when a guy who was really, really popular before he got injured as like the RKO thing, is that like, I don't know, the best way to bring in? Because the guy's going to get massively cheered when he gets in. And if he just RKO's Cody out of nowhere, like I don't know, like I mean,
that would be amazing if the Raw after Mania, Cody comes out, he's in the suit and he's got the title and he's cutting the conquering babyface promo, he's crying because he's getting to, like I said, put the title on the Rhodes family mantelpiece, and mm-hmm. then out of nowhere the Viper strikes and takes him down with an RKO and we're off to the races, and it's just like, you know, I taught you everything you know, but I didn't teach you everything I know, blah, blah, blah. And you're off, like I said, you're off to the races. I could also see a scenario with putting Finn Balor over Edge in Hell in a Cell, and then Cody comes out, cuts the promo on the Monday after Raw, and here comes the Judgment Day, and you get Cody versus, you know, Cody has to go through all of those dudes, but right. Ultimately you get Cody versus Finn at like the first big pay-per-view post-Mania. That's fun. I think that would get some nerds excited. That's a matchup we've never seen before.
No, and that's a Hunter favorite too. Like, I think you can notice
those
that, like,
two dudes we've never seen before. I think they're putting a lot of money in Finn Balor as a heel. That's probably what I would pitch. But
I'm gonna do that in my video game, Ange. Thanks.
Oh, that's dope. Are you on the new 2K23?
Yeah. No, I'm gonna start it this weekend. So, like, I don't know. I feel that, like, it's a. Like, I don't know, like, there, I feel like there's a big investment in Finn Balor that wasn't there with Vince. Like, I don't know, he has, like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how I feel about the Judgment Day, but I feel like, I don't know, like, he's elevated Rhea and he's elevated.
He's grown on me, for sure.
Yeah, he's elevated Dominic Mysterio, who I thought was unredeemable.
Yeah, I'll say this. One thing we have not seen since Cody's return is Cody really get taken advantage of in terms of like heat. Like, nobody has gotten the best of Cody, like no group or faction. Like, we haven't seen Cody get beat down, right?
Right, right.
So I think that's another reason why it's just like, the Raw after Mania, have those dudes come down, surround the ring, attack them like vultures, rip his suit off. And again, like, you're making money. So I think there are things to do with Cody as champion that can get you to Survivor Series or SummerSlam. And then if it's not working, you can flip the title back to Roman, and maybe Jey Uso is heated up enough that's a scenario. But again, I'm in the camp of you just have to put the title on Cody.
We're talking all things WrestleMania 39 with our good friend Andrew Goldstein. You can follow him on Twitter at Ange Gold. He's kind of kept a low profile, which is probably good because Twitter is kind of a cesspool these days. But we appreciate having him on every year to talk about WrestleMania. We talked about two of the bigger matches on the card. Is there anything else? Are there any other matches on the card that kind of stand out to you that you're looking forward to this weekend?
Well, I mentioned Edge Finn, I think, is going to be cool, even though like Hell in a Cell means nothing now because you're not allowed to bleed. You're really not allowed to use the cage. Right. But I am excited for the blow off of Finn and Edge. Honestly, it gets a lot of crap online, but Omos versus Brock.
Oh, man.
I want to see Brock slam the Giant.
So this is like an Andre Big John stud 2023.
Dude, I mean, look, the first time they touched was a bit, you know, Brock didn't get him over the top rope with the clothesline. It was a little herky jerky.
Right.
But last Friday with the weigh-in,
the scale,
and Brock, you know, bouncing off him and losing his balance and then picking up the scale, and you know, it kind of brought me back in. Also, I'm a huge MVP guy. I want to see Omos. I want to see the torch kind of be passed from beast to from beast to giant. Let Brock go away for a while and let Omos run, you know, go crazy on the roster as like this unbeatable big man. It's kind of a shame that we've seen him be beat by almost everybody on the roster. And this is just what they do, is they make these guys earn it. But I just think the passing of the torch from the beast to the giant would be kind of cool. And then I'm all in on Ray versus Dominic. I think
absolutely.
I think like, you know, we talked about hugs. I think at the end, once Dominic gets to sort of show his father, like what he's, you know, proved to his dad that he's a man and everything, and he beats his dad. I think Ray takes off the mask, hands it to his son, and he becomes the new sort, you know, the new
Kane.
Yeah, no, but I just think there's that, like, there's that Lucha Libre heritage there, that it's like you earn the mask, and now for the next 15 years, Dominic is the masked Mysterio, continuing the family tradition as well.
Wow, Ray. I know. I like that. Oh, I really know. No, I feel that, like, he is, like, I don't know, if you had to think of most, I always think of like WWE in like years, like I don't know, most improved wrestler. I think Dominic Mysterio is like at the top of that list. I mean, like what, whoever.
Look, he grew up doing this, man. He grew up watching this. Like, it's not a surprise to me that he's been an awesome heel. And he's understood how to like be a chicken S-H-I-T heel and say the right things and play, you know, obviously playing off the, like, he spent time in prison and he's got the teardrop. You know, the mommy stuff kind of falls flat a little bit for me, but like, he's been great. Like the stuff he does with his family, like call, you know, telling That's his great. Mom to shut up and like pie facing his sister and, you know, telling Ray that he's been a deadbeat dad. Like, that's old school wrestling to me, personal issue, like to the 10th degree. So I'm all in on Ray versus Dominic versus Ray. Whether they tell the story of the, you know, whether they pass the mask and all that stuff, I don't know if they're going to go that far, but I just think it's just been really juicy. And look, I'm excited to see Cena versus Austin Theory. They've kind of made Austin Theory a bit more serious now. They want people to take him a little bit more serious. He's not just this like goofy, you know, bodybuilder. So I'm excited to see. Obviously, there's no need to have Cena win.
Right.
Right. He doesn't need it. So it'll be cool to see Cena do the honors for Austin Theory and like really anoint him as like a major player going forward after WrestleMania. So I'm excited about that. And I got to shout out the ladies, like Rhea, Charlotte. Like last year, it was kind of a, you know, get up, go to the bathroom, get a snack match. But I mean, since Rhea got into the Judgment Day, I mean, she's been awesome. Mm-hmm. And I think, like they said, she's ready for this match. She's ready for the title. I'm excited to see what they do there. Obviously, Charlotte, after 14 title reigns, does not need the title.
Right.
But I'm excited to see where they go with that as well, because I just think there's so much money in Rhea Ripley. I mean, she just looks so much different, yeah. Both physically imposing and the way she's made up and the way she carries herself. It's just so much different than any other, you know, women's wrestler we've ever seen in WWE. And so, mm-hmm. Like I said, those are probably like my big five. I mean, they're probably everybody's big five, but
well, let me ask you about the Logan Paul match, Logan Paul Seth Rollins match. You didn't mention it.
That's another one that you can't get up for.
No, are you impressed as how good Logan Paul's gotten in such a short time?
He's you got to give him credit. Like, yeah. I want to hate him, right? You want to hate him, like
no, but I feel that's the prevailing thought is I didn't know who he was before he stepped in WWE, but I have to give him like it's like unwilling props. And like I don't know, like I feel that like I don't know, like he's getting put in these big profile. I mean, like his first three matches were with Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins.
It's unbelievable. He can talk, right? Mm-hmm. Check that box. He can work. He can fly around. Like, I mean, if you weren't sold on Logan Paul, and then you saw him in the Royal Rumble, the mid-air collision. I don't know how you come out of the Royal Rumble not being a Logan Paul mark in terms of what he does in wrestling. All the other stuff, I think you can legitimately hate on him and call bitch on his whole operation. But like in the wrestling ring, like he's money, dude. His gear's awesome, yellow and black. He looks like $1 million. There's so much you could do with him going down the line, like with his brother being involved, bringing in boxers, etc.
So there's no way that WWE doesn't resign him. Like, I don't know. You couldn't see, like, I don't know, like the AEW making a push for Logan Paul. Like, I feel that, like, he just fits in, like, the sports entertainment realm more than, I don't know, whatever the hell AEW is.
I don't even think Tony Khan would be interested in, you know, he's such a mark and he's so protective of wrestling, and he's more interested in getting guys from New Japan and all over the world than Logan Paul. I think if Logan Paul's going to work again, because, you know, I guess the internet rumors are that his contract's up after WrestleMania, but he'll be back in the same way that Goldberg comes back and in the same way that Tyson Fury comes back. They'll do one-off contracts or three-match contracts, whatever. But this is not the last we're going to see of Logan Paul. He's too good.
Let me just ask you one question about AEW before we wrap up this whole wrestling thing. Is there anything in particular? I know we're probably all more WWE marks than anything else, but is there anything in particular that AEW can do, in your opinion, that could narrow that gap between them and WWE?
I'm really interested in what they're doing with the Blackpool Combat Club, like finally making them like ass kickers and heels. That's all sort of playing out now with Moxley really being a heel, and now they turn Daniel Bryan like hardcore, and Cesaro finally has some like teeth to him. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested to see where that goes. The biggest thing with AEW and me is like the sort of 180 I've made on Kenny Omega. Like I, in the pandemic, like lockdown, I remember just like watching making my father-in-law watch AEW with me. And he's like, who's that geek? And he's talking about Kenny Omega. And I was like, yeah, he's kind of like this, you know, geeky video game guy, video game character. And, but that whole sort of year with Kenny Omega and Don Callis, and the long, you know, the elongated intros and everything, he kind of grew on me. And now I'm like this huge Kenny Omega fan. And I think obviously the bidding war over Kenny, when his contract is up, there's rumors of him coming to WWE. But I think if they can keep that, we're seeing now, if you've watched the last few weeks, that Kenny is back to being a single.
Right.
And they're teasing something with, you know, his apparatus sort of falling away and him really becoming this like the big baby face. And if they're building to MJF versus Kenny Omega, I mean, that's pretty cool.
Oh, which I thought you were going to say the build up to Omega CM Punk.
I mean, again, if you look back in my tweets, when that whole All Out thing happened, the next day I was saying, whether this was real or fake, they should lean into it in the way that Vince leaned into Matt Hardy and Edge and Lita. Like, okay, this happened. It sucks. It's unfortunate. But now let's all get in a room and make some money out of this.
Right.
But I don't. But do you think that's going to happen, or do you think that's going to happen or happening?
My like smart wrestling fan antenna has been up this whole time. Like these Instagram posts that CM Punk is putting up, like, you know, reigniting this like animosity. I just think it's all work. I hate to be like conspiracy.
Conspiracy
theory Jones. I think it's all work. I think these attacks that are happening backstage, you know, the Bucks got attacked and every, you know, they're making it seem like it's the Blackpool Combat Club. But I think if they reveal that like it's Punk or some entourage of Punks, like, you know, that could really put AEW on the map. If you get the Elite versus some faction of Punk or if Punk is in the black, he's the, you know, William Regal left.
Right.
So he takes over the Blackpool Combat Club, CM Punk, like in the shadow.
Okay. They need to hire you, Ange, because then maybe I might start watching AEW.
But I'm saying that's the kind of thing they could do that could pull some eyeballs.
Yeah, you know what? I was out on this until 5 minutes ago. Like, I'll be honest with
you. Yeah.
I was out.
Hey, look, I don't think any of that's going to happen, unfortunately. They're just going to give us Jungle Boy versus MJF. But like I said, if they really want to compete,
yeah,
you know, you got to go. You got to do what Paul Heyman would have done. You got to, like Eric Bischoff, controversy creates cash, man.
No, that's a really good point. All right. We got the wrestling stuff out the way. We got other stuff that we have to talk about on the show. Do you want to mention our alma mater? Because earlier this week,
yeah,
Adam Fisher named the new head men's basketball coach of the Temple Owls.
Well, mazel tov. Shout out to my fellow countryman, Adam Fisher. it's just what a world. I mean, I started in the last couple of years of Chaney, and then with Fran. You know, Fran was like a Philadelphia staple.
Yeah.
And then they went to Aaron. And Aaron McKee, obviously a legend of Temple basketball. So to see this like complete outsider, obviously there are ties, of course.
Right.
But to see this like young, kind of goofy, geeky outsider take over this program in the middle of North Philadelphia is just really compelling to me. There are so many challenges nowadays with NIL and with the transfer portal. And like, obviously Temple's late to the game. They have like four players left on the roster. I think Nick Jourdain just signed with Memphis today.
Correct.
Who's going to be on the team? It's like Jaleel White and his buddy and, and you know, who knows if even the recruits will stay. So I just think there's so many, it's like wrestling, man. There's so many compelling storylines with where the Temple basketball program goes from here. In a weird way, I was just like, I thought Bruiser Flint was like the, even though I don't think, I never thought he was like this unbelievable coach. Mm-hmm. I just thought like, okay, we got to keep it Philly. Right, he's available. Right. He's spent the last 8 years at two big, you know, huge programs. Maybe he, you know, he learned something. He's got the ties. He can recruit. He can charm the media. I thought like we were going to get a bruiser bomb. there were nights when I was just like, I don't know. Could Brett Brown? What about Brett Brown? His kid is cool in the area.
Exactly. Exactly.
Sure. Like just my brain was going everywhere.
You really are a really fantasy booker in all areas.
I mean, obviously all the Dawn Staley scuttlebutt, how I thought that would have been so cool if they could have afforded her. Obviously because John Chaney loved her so much and all that stuff. So I was in it, man. I was like refreshing Twitter and reading message boards and the whole deal. But I'm excited. Like the things I read about Adam Fisher are pretty cool. All the dudes he stole out from under Temple and Villanova to go to Penn State, which is not a basketball powerhouse, is pretty impressive. So I'm cautiously excited.
Yeah, I think you either had to get either a big name, like a, you know, or a name that people know, like a Bruiser Flint type of name, or a really good recruiter like an Adam Fisher. And like you said, he stole a bunch of guys from Temple at Penn State, recruited a bunch of guys down in Miami. Miami's in the Final Four. So like you have to, like you said, it's a tough, you know, road for Temple in this area with NIL in the AAC. So you had to kind of, you know, make a splash with this pick. So I like the Adam Fisher pick. I think he's going to stick around for a while, which I think is important.
Well, I was just going to say what's so tough now is any coach has like a 3-year grace period. And if they have, let's say by the third year, he has a, you know, 27-12 season, wins a game in the tournament, he's gone. Right?
Right.
The second you have any success.
Just like the football team. No, I feel that, like, I don't know, in Temple universe, Temple athletics in general has been kind of not the basketball team because there's been no stone to step on. Like, I mean, but the football team, I feel that's like, that was their MO for a while.
College sports in general, the second a coach has any success at a second tier program, they're going to get another job.
But do you think Fisher is going to, like, because I think it's going to take a little while to kind of turn this program around. So I think he's going to be here for at least 4 or 5 years.
I'm curious when the contract details come out to see if it's like a 4-year deal or, you know, even a 5-year deal, something like that, like to really give them time. But
right.
And, you know, I'm also just like still a bit in shock that in 4 years, Aaron McKee couldn't figure out how to do this.
Yeah. Right? Cause they have talent. Like, well, they had talent before everybody left or whatever. Like that was a talented enough roster to, you know, win a couple of rounds in the AAC tournament, you know, win 20 games, you know, be in the NIT.
Yeah.
The strategy part, obviously, as you know, was probably the issue, but like they had enough talent, which is why I was kind of more leaning towards a bigger name kind of guy, just to kind of bring
it. Also on the recruiting side, like I just saw Aaron McKee walking into these kids.
Exactly.
You know, I played with AI. You know, I can get
I play with Shaq.
You know. You play with Kobe.
I can bring AI into the locker room to like give you guys pep talks. I just thought like that would have moved some kind of needle for some of these kids, but the NIL just ruined, you know, really just becomes the great equalizer. Like if you don't have the ability to give these guys life-changing money, they're going to go where the life-changing money is. And, it's just really hard. Like you're going to have to be this scrappy Florida Atlantic type team that comes out of nowhere, or else you really just have no shot.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's go from one basketball team to another, the basketball team that we love, the Philadelphia 76ers.
Love? What are you talking about?
are they setting us up for disappointment once again, Andrew? Are we going back into this knowing that this is going to end in a second round knockout, just like it has for the last couple of years?
Guys, you know me. There's no way I have full confidence in a Sixers team. This team who, like 60% of this season, I was texting my friends saying, I hate this team. I just hate this organization so much. I hate Daryl Morey and the moves he's making.
What is it, Edge, what is it about this team? Is it just the culmination of just disappointment, or is it this iteration that has just, well, I don't know, because I really haven't watched because – I really think that after that, like, Hawks series, I still haven't recovered, and I don't know if I'll recover until they kind of turn the page. I mean,
yeah, and then, you know, Kawhi's shot, like, really is still, I think, you know, ringing in the ears of so many Sixers fans. But I think the first three quarters of this season, it just wasn't a fun brand of basketball.
Right.
But once Harden figured it out, and they went on this like post All-Star game streak, and you know, Embiid's MVP. You know, Embiid stepped it up. He's playing in games when normally he would take the night off, and the pick and roll is just like really working. And also, their bench kind of is finally. First of all, Doc is finally playing guys like Paul Reed, who gives that. You know, he's giving them 9 minutes of energy, and that's really all you can ask for after 6 years of Andre Drummond and who else do they have?
Greg Monroe.
Greg Monroe.
Let's see. Well, yeah,
Montrezl Harrell,
but he doesn't play.
Right? Montrezl Harrell. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
yeah.
I feel like Doc finally is like doing a lot of the things that we've all been asking for. It just drives me crazy that they couldn't do more at the deadline. Like, and every night I'm checking the Oklahoma City box score to see what Isaiah Joe is doing.
Doc wouldn't have played him. You know that. Doc would not have played that man. You know it.
And then you see he scored 33 points last night on 6 of 10 from three.
Right.
It's just brutal that Korkmaz is sitting on the bench after four. Like, we know what Korkmaz is. He's gotten starter minutes before, and we know that. You know, I used to call it the poop. The bench was like the poo-poo platter. Shake, Korkmaz, Thybul. It was the same guys. I like McDaniels. That's been pretty good. I just don't have the confidence that I want to have going into the playoffs. I think there's too many teams that scare me. There's no way we're beating Boston. I just don't think we're beating Milwaukee. Miami scares me, even though they're not good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Jimmy Butler is just not going to let his team lose to the Sixers, right? And so I just don't see a path. Unfortunately, I would love to be pleasantly surprised, as I was with the Eagles and as I was with the Phillies. But and I'm going this Friday. P.S. I don't know if either of you will be there, but I will be there. But it's just so hard at this point. Like, at this point, I just have to be surprised because there's no way I can go into it confident.
All right, so let's talk about something.
Some fluky things going to happen with Embiid, right? It always does.
Well, James Harden's already got the Achilles thing, so it's
going to be hard.
Yeah.
So Laurie, you mentioned the Eagles. Let's talk about a team that brings us a little bit more happiness, or has brought us more happiness over the last 12 months. The Philadelphia Eagles. I know you're a huge draft guy. I know you're a big draft guy. I love the draft. I don't know
what I live for,
but I know you're a huge draft guy. Eagles, 2 first-round picks. As it stands right now, 10 and 30, who are the two guys on your board? Who are the guys you are banging the table for in the first round?
Can I give you a name that would be crazy? It's not Bijan.
Okay.
I just have a feeling. I have Come a on. Feeling that somehow, some way, Jackson Smith Njigba is going to be a Philadelphia Eagle. I don't know why.
That's just not crazy.
The Quez Watkins thing, like, obviously doesn't work. Like, there's room for a third receiver who could, like, you know, slot guy. And I just feel like they're going to go all in on offense. If you read
– Just double down on, like, the best unit.
If you read what Jeffrey Lurie was saying at the owners' meetings about, like, we prioritize having an elite offense and we basically figure it out on defense, I was just like, I just think that's the dude. Somehow he's going to end up there. But obviously it's going to be the offensive lineman from Northwestern. Right?
Exactly. It's going to be Peter Skoronski, of course. But
there's going to be no swerve there. We already know. Like this, the Eagles have been booked, like, I don't know, fantasy booked the same way for the last 10 years. Yeah, but it works.
Obviously, if Nolan Smith Nolan Smith is the other guy that I'm just interested. I mean, look, we all go off just profiles. None of us know anything. Right. We're not real draft people. And if you just read about that guy, he's basically Hassan Reddick. So we know that they like that profile of player. They could use that kind of guy. Obviously, Derek Barnett's coming off an injury. I just think Nolan Smith is in the mix and not being talked about. And then what's his name? The defensive tackle.
Jalen Carter.
If he slips and they pass on him, it's like Warren Sapp all over again.
Ooh, you know, that's
I'll just talk about it for the next 20 years in the way that I did with Warren Sapp. So those are kind of the guys that just like weirdly interest me. But I just think somehow Jaxon Smith-Njigba is going to end up on the Eagles as like that third receiver and just be crazy, crazy elite passing game.
No, I don't think that's a crazy take. I don't think the Eagles are going to, you know, we all know the Eagles aren't going to spend the 10th pick draft capital on a Jaxon Smith-Njigba, but if they slide down and they're, you know, 18, 17, I could see it happen.
What I really think is going to happen is maybe they'll move back one or up one to grab a guy that they want. And right. 30 is going to get traded for, because they have they have such a limited amount of picks this year. I think 30 gets traded and you get a second and a fourth and you're just stockpiling young guys. So I don't even really pay attention to the mocks by the time you get to 30.
Right.
Obviously there's players I like, but I just, those three guys, like Nolan Smith, Skoronski, just because of history, and Jaxon Smith-Njigba, those are the Ange Gold Eagles.
Lock it up.
Now, Ange, are like, even if they do trade down a few spots, are you pro or con Bijan Robinson?
Dude, I was leading the Ricky Williams charge.
But that was 20 years ago. A reckless thinking.
No. Before we all realize that you don't take running backs that early, especially in 2023.
I get why you don't do it. And right. Like, you know, running backs and the miles they put on, you know, and that they have a fifth year and all of that stuff. But I just think he's so special, and behind the line that they've built. Behind the line that they've built with and bringing Kelsey back one more year. Lane Johnson does not have a lot more. Like, I just think there's a small window that fits right into three unbelievable years of Bijan Robinson before you have to figure out if you're going to keep him or let him go. Like, let's give a big old present to Kelsey and Lane for playing through his abdominal injury and just go for it. Like, you were so close. You were a minute 43 away from winning your second Super Bowl in a decade.
Yeah.
And you left it on the table, you know. You can't say run it back because they lost too many players. But let's get like a chess piece here.
All right, let's talk about the most important thing on the dock, and that's of course food. Because again, you are as wise as you are when it comes to wrestling. You are even wiser when it comes to the world of
the
food.
the wise man, well, the Heyman of hamburgers.
I would say that because I live in like the Jersey suburbs now, and it's just been harder to be trying things and eating things. So I'm a little out of sorts, but we talked about it last year. We probably talked about it 2 years ago. I got to get to Angelo's. It's like killing me that I haven't been yet. My birthday is coming up in May, and I'm going to try to make that happen. But that is still huge on my list, but I'd have to look it up, but there's a pizza place that looked really good in Philadelphia. It would take me too long to look.
Let me ask you while you're looking it up, because you told me on Twitter a couple of months ago, you went to Laser Wolf, the New York one.
Yeah,
you said that's legit.
Laser Wolf was really, really good. And again, it's the first course that's incredible, the Sala team.
Right.
Is this it? No. And then, you know, look, the entrees are, just like skewers and whatever. You go, the main event is the first course and the bread and the hummus and the dips and the whole deal. The whole experience, the New York location, it overlooks the city from Brooklyn, etc. I just love the whole deal. I love that whole Solomonov world.
They're all.
And I think I DM'd you. I had the egg and cheese from Kfar.
Yes.
With the za'atar on it.
Yes.
I mean, that is like a bite of food that sticks out in my head. It's like the best I've had this year. So on the Jerusalem bagel, blah, 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 you know, it's so good. And I listened to your episode all about that on your food podcast. And so all of those bites of food are just incredible. But like, what's popping in Philly? What's like the hot spot?
So there's a new, it's not new, it's a new location. Are you a fan of Thai food by any chance?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So I don't know if you knew, but Kalaya used to be in South Philly. Now it's in Fishtown. It's in a bigger space in Fishtown. I've been twice already. It's been open for like 2 months. Unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
That's the place that Phil Rosenthal went to, right?
Yes. But they're in a new spot from, where he filmed that particular episode. The food is unbelievable. Like, if you love Thai food, crab curry, all sorts of dumplings and stuff, like, it's fantastic. Like, if whenever you're in the city, see if you can kind of finagle a reservation. They're open for lunch and dinner and lunch now. So you can probably get in for lunch. I don't think it's that difficult. Dinner might be a problem, but
you know what I did? And I don't know if it happened before the last time we talked or since, but I did the hoagie room. At Pizza Bedia, which that was really fun. Like, it's like six of you in there, and you have your like private server who's like making the sandwiches in front of you. That was really cool.
Yeah, no, I've heard about that, but yes, Kalaya in Philly, definitely go to that. And then in New York, it's not as good, but have you heard of this place called Thai Villa? It's not too far from the Garden.
No.
Yeah, it's a place called Thai Villa. I was up at the Garden. I went to the Nas show up at the Garden like last month or whatever.
Yeah.
But this place, Thai Villa, like not too far from the Garden, really good Thai food. Like, if you're in the area, if you're in the city, for one night, in the area, you want Thai food, this place called Thai Villa.
I like that you're branching out. You and your wife are branching out. You're traveling a little bit. You're doing other cities.
Yeah, like I'm, trying to see the world like you see the world, like you've gone out and you're a resident of, outside of New York. But again, you're a Philly guy at heart. I'm a Philly guy at heart. But I like to venture to New York a little bit, kind of spread my wings a little bit,
I was in Vegas not too long ago.
There
you go. I went to a Jose Andres restaurant, which was cool. And I had Raisin Cane's chicken for the first time.
Which is at Temple now. They have
I know. I asked my buddy John DeCarlo. I really liked it. I liked their dipping sauces a lot. I thought the chicken was great. So I was into that. And like I said, I'm out of practice because I don't get out too much. But it's still, if I travel, that's like my first priority is to find like the good burger, the like really fun place to go. And there's just so many places in Philly now that I feel like next year, WrestleMania, I feel like we need to make a blood pact that we're all going to go. And if I don't hit Angelo's for my birthday this year, then around WrestleMania next year in Philly, we're figuring it out. I mean, my college roommate lives on the same street, so I have like a figure it out. But I think we have to make a blood oath next year.
Yeah. Come on. You got the plug to like to the Mage crew anyway. Like I mean like the Wally Mania crew.
Yeah, for sure. I've never been to Wally Mania, but those are all my guys, Kaz and Emilio and all those dudes. So I feel like next year could be my first Wally Mania. And I'm planning to do anything and everything next WrestleMania in Philadelphia. I have to, because then it'll be 20 years until it comes back. So I have to do it. So if not in May, then definitely WrestleMania weekend next year, the three of us hit Angelo's, blood oath, bloodline. We the ones.
Listen, we got Wally Mania. We got the Undertaker Dead Man Show. We got All Access. I don't even care what event it is next year, but we are linking up.
We the
up.
Ones and you the twos.
That's right. We're linking up and we are going to do that next year. Again, we're talking with Andrew Goldstein.
Guys, thanks so much.
Good friend here. And before we get you out of here, anything you want to plug, anything that you want to tell the people that you're working on right now?
I'm in the podcast game on the sort of corporate side. it's a little cryptic, but you know, I'm making good podcasts and putting them out there. There's a podcast called Don't Call It a Comeback with Ryan Shazier from the Pittsburgh Steelers. We basically talk about the biggest comeback stories of the week, obviously with the face of the unbelievable comeback in Ryan Shazier. And we just did our WrestleMania preview, like all the comeback storylines in this year's WrestleMania. We had Peter Rosenberg on.
Nice.
So that just dropped today. It's called Don't Call It a Comeback. It's from Wondery. I produced that, kind of created it. And that's one thing that's out now. And I have a bunch of things in the pipeline coming out as I develop cool podcast formats. But you can check that out. It's called Don't Call It a Comeback. Find it wherever your podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. And then just on Twitter, at @AngeGold, look for my spicy wrestling takes and call me in the comments.
Awesome, awesome. Well, again, we will kind of keep it locked on your Twitter this weekend, as we all are going to be tweeting as we watch the two nights of WrestleMania. Andrew Goldstein. Ange, thanks for joining us, man. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Ange.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it every year.
Cool. And that was our interview with our good friend, Andrew Goldstein. Always a pleasure to talk food and Sixers and NFL draft
everything.
And WrestleMania with our good friend, Ange. But we got a couple minutes left and we have some WrestleMania to talk about. There's two nights of WrestleMania and it's time for us to give our official predictions of what's going to happen at the Showcase of the Immortals out in Los Angeles. We're only going to talk about the big matches, so apologies to the tag team showcases. We will not pick winners in those matches. John Cena versus Austin Theory for the United States title. Who you got?
I'm going to divert from Ange. I think that, this might be one of those humbling experiences for Austin Theory. I don't think Cena holds the belt for long. I feel like it's a very quick turnaround with a new U.S. champ, but I think John Cena wins.
I will go with Austin Theory. I will think that John Cena doing the job for Austin Theory and passing the ceremonial torch in this case. We got Seth Rollins versus Logan Paul also on day one. Who you got?
I think this is a potential night one show stealer. I like Rollins in like a banger.
I think this is going to be the most purely entertaining match on the entire card, day one or day two. I will go with Seth Rollins. I do like the heel turn from Logan Paul that we've seen, but Seth Rollins keeps getting punched out. So I think Seth Rollins gets the one up on Logan Paul at WrestleMania. We can talk about the damage control match. Damage control versus Becky Lynch, Lita, and Trish Stratus. Who you got?
I feel that, there's too much out there not to acknowledge that. I feel like damage control wins with a turn from Trish Stratus.
All right. Flair versus Rhea Ripley. What you got?
Like Ann said, Rhea's it. We saw this in NXT a long time ago. She's just kind of refined it into basically looking like a next generation China. She's fantastic. I think she's going to end up for this year taking over the Bianca number one spot in the women's division.
I agree with you on both of those. The Mysterio battle, who you got?
I think Rey wins, and I think it's one of those, hug at the end. I don't know. This could go a lot of ways, but if you ask me right now, I think Rey wins a hard fought match because he is going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I think Rey wins. I don't think it's going to be a hug at the end. I think they're going to kind of build this out, stretch this out a little bit more, but I think Rey does go over in this one. And finally, the Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens versus the Usos, probably the last match on day one.
Yep, I'll go KO Sammy. I don't know. That just feels like a pretty great end to night one.
Day two, we got three meaty men slapping meat. Gunther versus Drew McIntyre versus Sheamus for the IC belt. I have Gunther going over in a tremendous battle.
I feel like, I don't know, they need to pay off the fella, Sheamus. I feel he's had a career renaissance, and I feel that the times that he had, my opinion, the match of the year last year with Gunther Walter. So I think Sheamus gets over.
All right, really quick. Edge, Finn Balor, Hell in a Cell. Who you got?
I like Balor going over. I think they're going to just double down on Finn.
I like that. I like that as well. Asuka versus Bianca Belair. I think Asuka gets the title over Bianca in this case. And you agree with that? We will skip the Lesnar and Omos match. We will not do that. And finally, Cody Rhodes, Roman Reigns, Undisputed Universal or Undisputed Heavyweight Championship. What you got?
I don't know. Like Ed said, it's time. And I feel like, I don't know, you're not going to be able to strike lightning like this with a baby face, maybe ever. So I think Cody wins. this is the moment that, like, I don't know, that are going to be on the DVDs and on the DVDs, like, I don't know, on the Peacocks, like, I don't know, like, Cody on the ring, like, I don't know, the fireworks. It feels right. I guess the question is, does Cody need to win clean, or can he have like a, like an interference?
He's got to win clean. He's got to win clean.
Okay.
He's got to overcome all odds and beat the Usos and Solo and Paul Heyman and everybody to win, to get the dub. I'm going to go anti, probably just for the sake of being an anti, because everybody's pro this. I see some kind of interference by the Viper himself. Because again, like I keep saying, like, if the story is, you know, if this thing is finished, this story, once you finish the story, where do you go from here? I think Randy Orton comes in, beats, you know, like, does, you know, does whatever dastardly thing he needs to do on Rhodes, and then we build up to a Randy Orton Cody Rhodes match at SummerSlam. So I will go Roman Reigns retains in this one. But again, that's just me being anti. Maybe I'm completely wrong. Thank you guys, as always, for tuning in. 106.5 FM, WPPM LP Philadelphia. You can follow us all weekend long on Twitter, because we will be tweeting about this as soon as we get off these airwaves. But until next week, we're out of here. Mr. Domingo, take us out, please.
Have a great weekend, everyone.
See you guys.
Bring on long days, sweltering heat, and acres that just won't end. Exmark mowers were born to deliver legendary reliability, signature cut quality, and stubborn durability that refuses to give in. Because like you, Exmark mowers were built for this. Visit your local dealer or explore an Exmark online for special finance offers available now.